Welcome to this week's Open Orleans User Group. Today is December 11th, and we do have an internet correction. Woo-hoo! Something happened.
Oh, the table's on fire. It's still like that 30 days of night.
It's day 11 right now, so it's a big...
We missed in this whole thing we get for you. Now we're running into resistance.
Four hours of resistance over here. So, how are you doing? Somebody's calling.
Good.
Good? Can we go around the room? Is anyone speaking? Oh, that's what it's saying? What did I do? Oh, I installed a new...
Uh-oh.
VMware.
Uh-oh.
It looks like...
Is it over in network anywhere?
Yes, it is.
What can you do with that?
You can virtually edit the network.
You create a rich network for an actual...
See, that right thing.
It was new VMware.
How hard is it to type one command? Come on!
It isn't what kind of command it is. So, it was fairly easy. The only thing was that on my virtual machine, I had old VMware tools and doesn't want to work in the... How do you call it? Next parent small or whatever. I have that. Yeah, that's a good tool, and I couldn't find that. So I can sign up for MOU.
You're saying, probably that tool,
Tools should be able to be installed straight from the VMware.
Tools should be actually open source.
It's just an ISO file.
Yes. What else did I do? Well, I did the newsletter.
Baked some beer.
I did bake some beer. Thank you very much.
I baked some beer.
Baked.
I gotta use this terminology here.
Okay, I baked some beer. I was blonde ale that day. On Sunday night, the beer ran out again. And so I had to catch it again. And that was about, does he know about it? What are kind of big technology from? And here's the new guy. Oh, here's the new guy.
I'm not new guy. I'm just here occasionally guy.
Occasionally.
But I fixed the router, so.
Oh, yeah. I'll buy it.
You'll bake him a beer.
You can take red ale.
All right. I'm not a huge beer guy, but I'll take care of it.
No, that was not the option. That was the bottom way. Save, we're gonna leave it.
Okay. Well, I'm currently getting 1,100 milliseconds on pings to google.com, so obviously we're all fighting the same spectrum here a little bit. One of the cool things I did this week is I rebuilt a RAID 5 array using Red Hat Enterprise Linux 12.1. What's that?
Lost the disk.
Or the corrupt superblock was the issue. So we tried to recover it with the file system intact, but unfortunately, there was like, you know, whenever a superblock is created, it's automatically backed up in like six or seven other superblocks. And then you can do like a E2FSCK, I think it's -B, to copy the block over to the original location. And then from there, you should be able to run like an FSCK and mount the directory and everything to test the integrity of the file system. But unfortunately, it was kind of a no-go. So I had to delete the array in the controller card and then rebuild the entire array from scratch, which basically rewrites all the blocks from scratch on all the drives. And it was 446 gig, SCSI 15,000 RPM on the system for our clients these days. But basically, completely recreated the array and then reinstalled the operating system and then restored everything from tape using Motar. Pretty fun. And, yeah.
So if you lose a superblock, that's going to be on more than one disk.
It should be in more than one location. They're dispersed out with several locations. I think the command is in just about every distribution, so you can test it out. I think it's E2FSCK-N to simulate, and then you can see where the block is and then where the rest of the backup blocks are. And then do on dev B to actually commit. And then you can do just a process instruction from there, and then you move if that fits, but if it doesn't, then you're pretty much screwed from what I learned. Anyways, did that, and also found out that Ubuntu 8.04 is the winner of choice when trying to restore and repair Vista file systems. And my uncle has a Vista Home Premium on his laptop, and it crashed, saying, you know, Vista's trying to fix the problem, whatever, their little utility, and just their processes and processes and processes. And I tried different distros, and I tried Nopix, and I tried 7.04, but 8.04 was the winner, something about local TFS support or something like that. But
it was able to mount the drive, and you were able to pull.
I booted off the just the CD without actually, you know, destroying any data. I was plugged in an external drive and mounted it using the force command with, you know, the switch for NTFS, and then it could see the files and write to the drive just like the native operating system could, and then just copy. And
well,
it didn't
actually.
It's corrupt DLL files, and so Vista wouldn't boot, but we could get around that and got all this QuickBooks file back by, you know, mounting it.
I'm surprised by any of the other distributions wouldn't mount what happened. It just wouldn't.
Yeah, they've been improving NTFS as Ubuntu's been involving. So
there was a crash by forget what it was like.
There was a couple
3G or something
was originally a project that was combined with the user space file system project that we're going to call, but then it broke off.
Some of the distributions didn't get booted on this drive. You know, just shows the splash screen where it says start or install. You hit start without installing, and it just kind of hung right there.
Trying to recognize the drive.
Or the chipset or something like that. Something wasn't compatible. 8.04 was new enough that it had whatever hardware that it was looking for. Cool. It was able to boot it and force it and RSync it.
There's already newer version.
Beta,
right? No, 8.10 is up.
8.10 is up?
That's 2 hours already.
Yeah,
8.10. You need to come here more often.
I'm sorry. I brought it along to upgrade. It is 8.10. That's the one that I use. Because I'm going to upgrade my
partition. It's pretty sweet.
And I like that.
I like the wireless support. That worked right out of the box.
Everything worked out of the box. The iSight worked out of the box.
Oh, really?
Wireless out of the box.
Can I upgrade from CD?
I've done bulk. You can do it.
Did you boot it right off the CD and then you just read it and then just
there's
an opportunity to take your repository and point it to the CD.
That might be easier because the wireless being slow. Maybe it just point to repositories and upgrade them.
But then and then after you get the upgrade done, then you'll have probably a ton of update check. But I remember when I went from 804 to 810, it was like 2,000 some files, and the update was over the internet. So it's probably a lot faster to receive them. Or at least less bandwidth. So
And if you have your own separate partition, so you reinstall it and all your stuff there.
Sure.
Cool. Thank you. How about you?
Oh, it was a pretty slow week, actually. I sort of did some preparation stuff. Anybody know what Alice is? It's a program.
Isn't that the one in...
There was one that we mentioned. This is one of the newsletters, and that's mentioned it.
It's a
programming language to learn programming that CMU developed. And I downloaded it. It's very simple to install. And I'll tell you how it works after I get a chance to fool around with it. And I also downloaded some of those Java music things. There's that guitar chord assistant and something called Skink, which is an ABC file editor. They run in Java. It's a little complicated because they like some of the older. Well, actually, the one likes. I'm running that 7.10, so I had to put six or five, something but five or better to run the ones, and something less than four to run the others. So I have two, you know, Java runtime environments that I have to point at the right file there, so.
It could be a blue sheet that's got the word of my name or how people write it, version of Java, maybe it's not. It's not quite as compatible.
Is anyone playing with Ruby on Rails in my mind?
Not yet.
I've heard it's the way to go.
It's
really, really, really nice if you want to do something within what they've thought of what you want to do. But as soon as you want to do something external, no. It's pretty, you're kind of limited with what you can do, but the stuff that you can do it extremely simply.
It's a magic. If you want to do what a magic was intended, it's fine. But if you want to do something really special,
right,
then you might as well.
How about always comments? Can I use that?
Always comments.
Yeah.
Are you saying something?
Potentially.
Go ahead and tell me.
There's a guy that goes to my church who wants to set up a website to do as a ministry. He's the youth leader for the children's praise and worship, and he wants to set up a website using WordPress. And then he wants to be able, he's recorded two CDs now, he wants to set his CDs on a website. I was thinking of making WordPress and OS Commerce, so that I'm thinking of visual security and stuff, and it's all pretty new to me, so I'm just curious to know if anyone else has done anything like that.
Because there was a PHP e-commerce, which is open source.
Mm-hmm. I struggled there.
JS, yeah. I don't remember the name of it, but it is on a website. So if you search on Apple Conference, you might find it.
Cool.
I'm sorry, you have to go on.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Oh, I was finished.
You were finished.
Very little to say.
Oh, okay. How about you?
No, I'm just reviving the sourdough starter.
It's probably.
Oh, I see.
So.
It's good sourdough bread.
Yeah. So you had a little bit of sourdough bread for next time?
Yeah.
Like a starter? Do you have a name? Is it he or is it she?
Oh, the sourdough? Yeah. We did used to know what it was. It was actually something, believe it or not, that was carried on the Oregon Trail. The sourdough supposedly has a heritage that goes back to, like, you know, the wagon train days.
The starter you used to make. Yeah. Somebody who used to make his own starter just out of, like, wherever he used to make a lot of local starters.
Mm-hmm.
In the air. And depending on where you are, your sourdough bread will taste very good.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
We actually have two
different starters, and this one we hadn't made. You have to keep taking stuff out. You can't, you know, and so you have
not too much waste.
So this one we kind of hadn't made any bread out of for a while. So there's a procedure to unpolluted and restart it. And so we had it takes a little bit of doing, but it's easy to do. So that's what we.
The woman was on the Oregon Trail. It's practically indestructible. They dry it out.
Yeah.
And actually, this little crock for log cabins would be.
Yes.
And then, you know, in the spring, they would use it again.
Well, I suppose they made it through broken wagon wheel, dysentery,
It's just the people who die.
Yep, just the people. The yeast survive.
Like cockroaches in
the microwave.
It will survive no matter
what. Yep, yeast in the Oregon Trail.
If you want to buy that computer, you're
thanks. I'm jumping up and down for that.
Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that.
I'm not gonna buy a Dell from that dope smoking hippie. Didn't you hear that kid who did all those dude? You're getting the Dell commercials. Got busted.
Yeah, you got busted for possession. Yeah.
Wow.
What happened?
So that was my duty.
The dude getting the Dell guy? He didn't make any more commercials after that.
No, he's not missing out from his tone.
Everybody here, say Byron.
How goddamn ridiculous. Sorry, this is so off topic, but it's so also frustrating that the governor of Illinois is saying business as usual. I just got out of prison, but I'm not going to leave no matter what you say. You'll have to
abide. As much as I can.
He was already under investigation 2 years ago. And instead of stopping taking bribes, he says, no, I'll just keep doing it even more and more. Like, and they're talking about the legislature is talking about the possibility of looking into impeachment.
Yeah, they're actually also the Attorney General of Illinois.
She's trying to declare him unfit to hold office, and then they.
But his political life is toast.
Oh yeah, his reputation.
Well, I don't know about in Chicago.
Well, you're all right.
He sounds perfect to run a big corporation.
Yeah. Well, you know what they said about Rustin Kowski, who was another guy from there who ran into some corruption problems. That they used to say he's a bastard, but he's our bastard.
That was the quote, though. It sounded so like just out of the scumbag story out of the movie. He was like, I've got this fucking golden egg, and I can't just fucking give it away. Like, talking about the Senate position, that he was trying to sell Obama's Senate position.
Right.
So what is the price tag? About $50?
It was more like $50 million, actually, for the campaign contributions. And there was Today's Show was trashing his wife this morning. They have some tapes of her using some really foul language, so the Today's Show reported on that this morning.
We were talking about this at work and thought that my employer should get in on that and just offer a couple million bucks and become senator.
You know, or John Menard. John Menard would make it very far in Illinois.
Okay, let's move on from political contributions. So,
continuation of the same old stuff as far as computer goes.
How about the flyer?
I'm not giving you the flyer yet because you're going to hang it up, and then people are going to come, and then we're not going to be here for 3 weeks straight.
See, these people who do arts projects, they have so much power. Maybe I need to buy it from you.
Okay. You know what? You can get it tonight if you're going to buy it from me.
Oh. I'll tell you $50 million.
No, you know what? I'll buy it for easily. You love corruption scandals. I'll buy it for $350 off on a Dell computer.
He doesn't accept that.
I'll try another one. 30% off.
Look, I'm just saying, you hang it up. Somebody will see it. They'll come next week. No one will be here. They might come, like, they'll skip 1 week, then they'll come again, no one will be here, and then they'll get all frustrated and they won't come.
Oh, boy. Santa stops here, says, wait till I give you the down to you.
Yeah, exactly. And then he won't leave any presents.
I see that.
Leave chunks of coal, like big chunks of coal, the size of Dell computers.
Well, you have the, your 30% off on that.
I think you just leave it on the computer.
Is that what I said?
Well,
so a cold Dell computer, very similar.
Only one's combustible. Dell computer.
Cool.
Anyway.
Boy, like,
as far as Linux.
You got like cool fun today.
Oh yeah. As far as Linux.
Fired up.
Yep. Same old. Fedora 10 is pretty decent now that they've got the first wave of bugs all fixed. The three ATI drivers, not so much yet, but they're getting there. I guess I've kind of got like one of the in-between cards where it's not really like a 300 or it's actually a 300 core with like 400 peripherals, and then it's got like a 500 chipset around that. So it's like a combination of like every version, so nobody supports it. Because everyone either supports the 300, and then there's the other driver that supports the 500. And this one is supported by both.
Is it dedicated or is it?
Yeah. It's one of the, it's a Express 1200 or whatever.
Upgrade one? No.
No.
Wishful thinking.
And I wish. Anyway, at least the wireless works. Pre-wireless, didn't have to use NDIS wrap or anything. Driver just worked. I was playing some more with Mono Develop. Playing some more with Mono Develop.
So did you find out that it's debugging?
Yeah, it can't debug.
See, you just need to find
it's got, it is a great user interface, except for there is no integrated debugger yet.
So you say debug, Mono Develop?
No, you don't do anything. Yeah, you can't write bugs. Bugs are not supported. Mono Develop.
Mono Develop. That's how you take care of quality of the code.
Exactly. Currently, what you have to do is you have to use the command line debugger, and you have to type in the commands by hand using the command line debugger. They're working on the debugger. They've got it. It just doesn't work with the release. Supposedly, there was a release like about 2 weeks ago that now has the integrated debugger working, but it's not in the repositories yet, and I don't want to have to go.
That one will be actually in that release of OpenSUSE that I want. So
yeah, so actually.
Done. Is it going to destroy the office? Or
I don't think it's going to destroy Java.
I don't think that happens.
The thing that's going to save Java is that it's open source now. It's quickly becoming one of the de facto standards distributions.
On one side, also, that's one side, even though they were late for dinner. The other side is that a lot of enterprises have a lot of code written in Java.
Yes.
So, and it's not just one, two pages, you know, like .NET something, you know. Those are the whole enterprise ERP systems.
It's 10,000 lines of code that they need to put in as well.
Wow.
And just because you got to go through six layers.
And that's why you need to use three different frameworks. You know they are compatible, but they are different. Never mind.
But anyway, that Mono Develop actually looks really, really good. And once they get the integrated developer, I mean, that's going to take over as the development IDE for Linux, I'm pretty sure, because it has support for the standard auto make tool chain as well, not just Mono only.
Well, I think that it started as a project. It was like
I think it actually started off as Sharp Develop, I think was what it was called, and then they split from that and created Mono Develop from that.
And I think it is year that you will be able to have multiple languages, something like Eclipse. Cool. Is that it?
I think so. Oh, there's a alpha for Opera 10.
Yeah, I read it. It's
supposed to be 30% faster.
And also passes the acid test 100%.
Acid 3, yep.
But then I read somebody downloaded it and that wasn't that excited about it. It's alpha. So.
Yeah, usually Opera's alphas are pretty good. So. If you're bored and want to take a look at it, download it. If not,
I'm not very much on the history anymore, so I'll wait.
Thank you.
Cool. How about you, Amanda?
Not too much. Been working. We went up to the cities and saw the musical Wicked this weekend.
Musical what?
Wicked.
Wicked.
Tells the stories about the Wicked Witch of the West and the Good Witch growing up in the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, the backstory. They were roommates in college.
Yeah.
I was always wondering at the same time.
I see. Was it in Walkout Art Center?
No, it was at the Orpheum in the Nam. Very good.
I think they won. And that's it? More fun stuff? Any GPS tracking in the sub-zero freezing temperature?
We should do that once. Go up for do a winter cache. That'd be fun.
That would be fun.
Yeah, we'll do that sometime.
But not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
You do the ones around the lakes, then, too. You can go up the lakes now.
Oh, yeah, the ones on the islands.
Yeah.
There's actually one up on an island up at Lake Minnesota.
Does the Lake Minnesota freeze?
What?
Does the Lake Minnesota freeze?
I hope so.
We'll send a man out first.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on the area.
We'll send a tester.
Wait, I don't know about this.
Don't worry.
You're the greatest one here ever.
We'll give you inflatables.
Oh, okay.
Around the arms, see, out there like this with your coat on.
You'll need to swim. Miss it on that, too. How are you, Brian?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
But I did just get an email from Think Geek.
Who?
Think Geek is the website.
Okay.
And one of the things they have is the photo frames that you can, visual photo frames. This one is Linux.
Interesting.
And it's got a touch screen, and you can get in, and it's basically a mini computer, but they made it into a photo frame. So you can put a Flickr account on there and get things good, and you can. That's one of the things. You can log in your Gmail account.
Well, that's got wireless on it too.
It's got wireless.
What's the price on
it? It's $239, and it is a 10-inch.
Oh God, that's not.
It's very close to a regular photo frame.
Tell Brusky about that.
Okay.
He might actually just go and buy that because he was looking for something.
I was
some dedicated PC that's got a touchscreen. Or like a kitchen for recipes and such.
Well, this
and
one says it's got the Wi-Fi. It's got the Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi built in, 800x600, full touch screen, Linux based, 802.11b and G, 1 gig internal memory, auto synchronization with Flickr, email photos to the frame, Windows Live brand support for photos, news, and weather. USB mass storage connectivity, MP3 support to play music, and auto power saving. Clock smart function.
Where can we find it here? By the way, the internet is very small, but
on the right.
Probably because everybody is very tall.
That icon right on the top.
No, over more to the
right. It says IDLA, your right column.
Over.
Third one down. There you go. That's the guy.
That is not bad at all for a price.
No,
for having a touch screen?
For a touch screen.
And you said 10-inch screen.
I think
fairly good size.
800x600, and it doesn't say the size, but every 800x600 touch screens I've seen are all 10-inch.
Actually, 8-inch.
Is it 8-inch?
8-inch digital LCD, so.
But that's not that big.
Right there.
Yeah.
4x3, so a little bit taller than that.
Yeah. A little bit taller square. So it looks like it's got the keyboard pad, image for a keyboard on there to type in stuff.
And it's Linux, so you can do whatever you want with it, really. You can wipe it and put Ubuntu on it.
One gig. So
you can compile on it.
The cool thing is you can even pull up a Google account, so you don't even need to have a PC. You just have it running all the time. Check your Google real quick and we'll flip it back to photos or something.
I'll think of the new button next week. When we have another run? Are we on?
Yeah, what's the deal with next week?
That was going to be Eric's house, right? But
see, maybe.
That was going to be at my house at one point, too. But
I think that either one was an option.
But, well, we would need to know.
Next week I couldn't do it because I can't guarantee I'll be around it.
You want to see what I was doing this week? I went to
web2.is-ph
rather than fh.
Failed to connect. web2.is-ph.
Yeah, it's on port 8080.
So it's web2.phobos.isahit with dashes in between.
Phobos and dot.
Yeah, yes. After the Phobos, it's a dot.
Web
photo.
You need to get a domain this class.
Well, this is on Mars. We aren't paying for it.
It's gate.net.
It's a free vendor.
KDE80?
Yep.
Oh, can I show something when you're done? I have an interesting idea about you may.
So, what is it?
This is, and then, I guess it. This is our final project for my network design class. And we scroll down and go to that logical diagram.
Logical diagram.
Yep. This is the gateway. It's just connected to, right now, it's just connected to a charter gateway. But on the inside, you've got a GMZ with a web server, actually two web servers. And it's Microsoft Review, which is actually pretty slick. We're playing around with that today. But the way it will be, it's a collaborative project software. It's, I don't know, you, like there's a shared whiteboard and shared files.
But like a SharePoint server?
Yeah, it's very overlapping. Okay. That SharePoint, Communicator, and Groovy are all basically the same product. But this is, we've been configuring this over the last 2 or 3 weeks, 2 days a week, 9 empty flats. So we have a DMZ with the 3 servers, and then that connects to our WASOC core, which it's all in the same room, but they're separated. It's 3 separate racks with T1 lines between the 3 Cisco. There's some giant Cisco 7500 routers.
Separate IP schemes too.
What was it?
Separate IP schemes too.
Yep. It's all private IP. All of our workstations in our lab are connected to it. And we have a few different servers running random stuff. We have a server with connected to a couple cameras that are streaming. Basically security feeds to our lab.
Do you have demos of the feeds? Can you see them?
That was one of the things we didn't end up getting off was the feeds. We just went in the car. So it's twice a week. There's 2 different sections, and we only work twice a week for 2 hours.
And we have to share
the network design class, yeah. So we configured all the routers. We also have the T1 links. So, secure everything down, all the switches are set up with port security. Tomorrow is our last day of class, and we're setting up ACLs.
So, let's not get there. 3 servers in DMZ. So, if you would have any database server, what would that be in DMZ?
The database server? Probably wouldn't be in DMZ because your workstation, well, I don't think, connects to the database server.
Means
the web server interface.
Means that you have a web application. So.
But you're not connecting to the database server. You go to the website and the database server
would never be in the DMZ.
Yeah.
Well, you don't have direct access to it, yeah. So it doesn't have to be in the DMZ.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about handwriting data. I'm talking about the database which is driving your website.
Right, yeah. Right. It should be in the DMZ. Because anything that doesn't need external access doesn't go in the DMZ.
Direct access. Direct. Your web server that's in the DMZ would reference your database that's not in the DMZ. That way, if you're not hacked, they still have to go through a major firewall to get your database.
Yeah. You probably lock it down on the port that is connected to. So that, only traffic from such and such port on such and such IP and such and such Mac can get access to this interface.
Right. Secure it on the set of the app firewall that only allow this PC, this...
Yeah, it's an access control, basically.
Yeah.
And you can even refine that down to this computer or this MAC address, or this range of IP addresses can connect to this server at, or only at this port, and stuff like that, or this.
But if somebody would hack the HTTP server, then they could actually traverse to a database server.
The HTTP server? And they hack the web server, then they would be able to access the database server because the web
server. But you can set your database server up to say, the database server may have dual purpose and stuff, so you can set like only a database for that web portion.
Yeah.
It depends on how it's
connected. It shouldn't connect to it and stuff.
I mean, you can set up, password restrictions and hash all the algorithms and work. Only,
So even if they hack the web server, they still have to know more passwords to get through to the SQL database.
Mm-hmm. But then server would have the password.
It would, but...
But you may be only, you can set it up for only to do certain things.
Yeah. If it's authenticating, it's still encrypted on the web server, though. Even if you could change it, like say the web server's comments, it's running Apache or some flaw or something like that. So they run some exploit and they give root access on the HTTP box. So they can change the password on the website, but that wouldn't change the shadow file on the database side. And it wouldn't change
But for the web server to log in, it's going to have a password for the database.
Web server will have some process that goes
But if you compromise that server, you just do whatever you're trying to do off of that server.
You should be able to do everything that the web server was doing to SQL. But you may not be able to get past. You may still only be a user on the database and not be able to get into an access manager or something. So, since you have this up, the real test is if you just hack into your website. I did a repo on Pepsi. So your real test is if we start hacking right now on the website to see if we get in the servers.
Right now it's actually not and then the other thing I've been working on, which is also really at work, they gave me my boss gave me this little box. It says 3-4 DB network. He's like, find out what this does. Give me a report tomorrow. So I look into it, it's actually pretty cool. I don't know where they found it, but it's a serial to Ethernet converter that you can basically use it for a raw serial tunnel over Ethernet.
We've got to use that in our factory
for that. Yeah.
For example, we'll have scales, we'll have waste scales on the factory floor, and your serial only runs 50 foot at maximum.
It was a serial device.
So you put this on there, you stick it on the network, and now any device in the factory can access it. Like
as long as they have another port box, or you can actually do it's called, you can get software that will do a COM port redirect that will connect. I mean, basically how it works is a telnet into the box, and then opens a raw serial connection through that telnet.
So what's this device called, and how do you go by one? Because I've got a couple of really old, large format, plotters. They're straight serial, and it's a pain in the ass because it's very hard to get machines.
You can't buy a computer anymore with a serial.
Right, you can't, but besides, it's just hard to get it near something that you can hook up a serial cable to. It'd be a lot easier to do it over the internet.
It's $150, and you can buy it with it.
Serial. So let's say like the scanner, barcode scanner, those are serial devices. Anything what is more in the manufacturing or as far as devices like that.
Yeah, but my question is, are they sold commercially?
Yes, they are sold commercially.
And they cost how much about?
It's not cheap.
It is very low.
$150, $170.
Same as the Guitar Storm class. Probably not as much fun,
but it was kind of cool. You could actually set up, it would run a web server that will monitor different variables over that serial line
and you can actually monitor whatever it's running, and you have to write the website that you can update. You know, you can change settings.
Do you want me to find out the brand you use?
Yeah, please. You know, a good reliable one would be nice.
Let me talk about stuff like that. Is there any device, well, let's say like you are measuring temperature. Is there any device for you to actually record the temperature in the, let's say, in each half an hour intervals?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. What's that GPIB stuff? You want to get a GPIB. It's a general purpose information bus card, and there's various kinds of software that'll, you can pretty easily program
some of them in USB or serial, and you can use your PC to collect the data, or some are just standalone devices that will collect data and you later connect up to them and pull the information off. Mm-hmm. There's lots of, not lots, but there's quite a few vendors and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, what was the big one that did the GPIBs for the Hewlett Packard plotters? I mean, I'm trying to remember the name of that company. It's been so long since I looked at it, but it's, I think it's National Data or something like that. Anybody?
That sounds right.
National Semiconductor, maybe?
No, it's National.
National Scientific.
No, some with National and the word data in the full title.
I have a cat.
No.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and the GPIBs are very solid. I mean, and they're very easy devices to use and program. You know, you can just run GW Basic and use it. Just open a port to it.
Is that it? Or you have a few more minutes?
No, I was on the
call. Okay, how about you?
I heard a lot of flack this week.
You got a lot of flack?
I got a lot of flack. Well, 70 games of flack.
So how many music is that? Like 3, 2 games?
133.
That's everything I own. Somebody lost.
You want
all of your audio losses.
Yep.
So you can transfer it to whatever you want. And somebody cracked it. Do you really have speakers big enough to actually hear things?
Yeah.
It doesn't do anything. Hey, cool. Should we demo on that? Like the differences in audio quality? Like bringing on lossless.
Well,
it's highly subjective, though. That's the problem with anything that you do.
It depends on what you're listening to. Like, you go by the definition of
a heavy metal
that has brass components, strings components, all kinds of stuff in it. And when I was talking about it, that when I ripped that to like a 256K off file, it just strums so much like a static. Because there's so much happening that you can't get a good sample of it. You almost have to go to a higher bit rate and the losses go to capture all that.
If you go with the higher bit rate, then 5 dB just take it off.
For portable use, I keep it, 256 to 300.
So when it rattles with your power, does it actually, is it in harmony or?
Yeah.
Shook everything off of it.
Yeah. You need to hit right a hole that it would
not be the off the
But I used a Banshee to do all the ripping and music organizing. The other thing that maybe important and everything, like audio change and this stuff, and I tried everything number four and six for some reason. I just never did it right, so but this did it right the first time. Goes on to my player, I can see everything.
Did they have no brains with those music brains?
No. And there's actually a shared music owner's library. We've got one of these applications have a gap music share on there or something.
What's new?
Well, you can have a network.
It's a little more high tech.
Yeah. You have a server, and then you have a network will find that kind of protocol.
So, yeah, it's applied.
It has an Android.
You put your Android in Banshee. Banshee's good. I like Banshee. But other than that, Al is back on my desktop. Right, and my BAC, I took on the theme for my BAC.
That's a big Al box. So then BAAC.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, I found a theme for it that basically you turn your clock into half.
Okay.
A little hands on it.
B-A-H?
I got a question. I just remembered I ran across a little tool this week that fascinated me. It's called a ZeroConf Service Discovery Utility. And I started running it at home, and it didn't do anything. I mean, I always have things running on this. I don't know what they're doing. So I see something that says Service Discovery. I get it and see if it tells me any of these things that are running on my computer or what they do. Well, nothing showed up at home, but now something showed up. It says VNC Remote Access, Adam's Remote Desktop on Adam's Laptop. And I click on it, and a very interesting little thing comes up here, and maybe somebody could tell me, what is this telling us? Oh, wait a minute, it's not doing it now. Did you shut it off, Adam?
No.
Yeah, no, wait a minute. I did something with it before.
He really works on NSA,
Here it is. This whole window shows up, and it tells me all kinds of stuff. Now, what is that actually telling me here? I mean, it says VNC Viewer Free Edition for X built September 10th, so-and-so, and then it's got all kinds of other stuff here.
It's the help file. The convention for connecting to VNC as a client
isn't
displaying or showing all the options that it needs.
So why does that show up? Why does that show up when I click on this little thing that says Adam's Remote Desktop?
Probably the distribution has some little applet that automatically runs and looks for VNC connections.
Mm-hmm.
So it tries to create with like the default config, and then doesn't connect. So it dumps out like this is probably a lot of the stuff that's you do like command dash help or man
or just nothing
or something like that. And displays all the options that you can run from the command.
It's convoluted and kind of plugs into other programs. If you actually open a VNC client program, that ZeroConf will actually go out and if you want Vinigray or whatever, will actually present to you what's available on the network.
What'll happen with that? Pulse Audio too. Pulse Audio's got ZeroConf built in. If you have Pulse Audio on multiple network devices, it will show up on that, and you can connect to other devices and play sounds over your network using that.
Well, I do VNC stuff a lot from one computer to the other because I don't like to walk over there and do something like update a virus file, So, I've just never done it over there's ways you can do it through SSH, and stuff like that. So actually, this doesn't really tell me anything, that is of really any use unless I already know what it is. Is that what it's?
Does
that what we're
telling? Program itself, or
the ZeroConf service.
Have a VNC client. The ZeroConf just discovers it and makes it available for other clients.
Well, that's okay.
He already made a backup.
Well, he didn't take half of the interesting stuff then, really.
He just made a backup.
There's way more interesting things on here than open source.
You probably lose something, now that you've included the Sheedy theme in the newsletter, I'm already off it.
So business is what kind of informant.
It moves faster than the speed of business.
Absolutely. I'm going to Nimbus now. Somebody made a good report of the
Nimbus, write that down for next week.
Actually, I was running Nimbus at some time.
What is Nimbus?
It's a theme. Default Solaris desktop.
I like that.
But now you can fix the open office job.
Cool. So that would be about it.
Anybody has anything you want to share with us?
Yeah, I was just going to mention, I did not go to bluehost.com. This is who I use for like web hosting and stuff. This is a recent change to their stuff. It's just bluehost.com here. You can get inexpensive web hosting and they used to have 120 gig, I think it was, storage for $7 a month. and unlimited transfers and stuff, they recently switched unlimited hosting space, unlimited file transfer, unlimited hosting domains for $7 a month.
Wow.
And that's what I use. So.
Your
backup song? Look at that guy, he can't believe it.
He's like, yeah, our business model is really screwed.
Really stupid, but we're still making money.
Yeah, they use a Gmail storage on the back end.
Absolutely.
So you have, you can, as many domains as you want to register, and as much space as you want to use.
That's what it says. Bandwidth. Under the control panel, when you log in, the limit on the hard drive size still says 350 gig. Forward capacity, but so I haven't reached that maximum yet. I haven't actually uploaded that much content, but I thought it was interesting because it was cheap. And
got that magic word right there,
Ruby on Rails.
Well, there, you know, speaking of Ruby on Rails, there was a group that was meeting up at that restaurant. Which one was it? It was the one that was the Green Mill. It was several times we've meeting there. There's been a group that's a Ruby on Rails user group that meets at lunchtime. I don't know how rarely they do it, but they look like it must be a local group. So
actually, yeah, the guy from that like was a group of people in Ruby on Rails, and they give presentations on Ruby on Rails through that user group. And sometimes they meet there at lunchtime, sometimes they meet there at this week, actually, I think yesterday their presentation, they like talking about SharePoint. And through that, they SharePoint user
and go.
I've not. SharePoint, network drive, dumping ground.
Yeah. Oh, man.
That's what I was saying about the whole Ruby thing. Everyone thought was talking about how slick it was. It's like an entire new package. It's about the size of Microsoft Office. Massive, bloated. Lots of eye candy, probably about 40 megabytes of RAM just for it to sit there.
You pay for your money, you need to have a little code. That's the bottom line. If that would cost only $30, it would be about 20 megs. It would do the same thing.
I'm going to take a bigger pay cut this year. Trading stuff like a factory.
Yeah, absolutely. You should stop there.
$900.
Cut it out! He did. He cut it out.
Copy, paste, modify.
Notepad. Write with a hand.
Copy, paste, modify works great because it maintains the maintenance.
Like you find out where Notepad is.
That's what I was thinking, like,
no, they don't know that.
Yeah, I just got an ad from Dell, and it was interesting to see that their basic, RAM configurations are like for 6 gigabytes now.
Yes.
That big?
Yeah.
That would be it.
Wow.
Yeah.
But in the running Vista, you probably
Yeah. If you're not running a 64-bit version of Vista, though, you can't use it.
You can't use it.
What is going to use it here?
What? That's been going the whole time.
That's been going on the whole time. House music.
He was. He can't now.
Vista.
And all of a sudden, music starts playing in your head.
because my network is not working anymore. Priority in entertainment is more important than networking.
You know what? Adam sold me on Banshee.
Really?
I started using it, and I haven't used Rhythmbox since.
I was a big Rhythmbox fan before.
The last time I tried Banshee, it was okay, whatever. But it's got everything that Rhythmbox does, and it actually works.
They have 2+ full-time people working on Banshee.
They're doing a good job.
They try.
Probably resources and all that.
I got to put money in. I'm using Avro. I use Avro. It's there. It transfers my files to my device.
Very nice thing I used a while ago is I had all my music on a database rather than their small SQLite. I actually had it in MySQL because I had like 60,000 parameters.
SQLite is slowed down when we have that many here.
Yeah, I can tell, but they're really like, how to go into the MySQL. Well, it was like a quarter of the speed.
That's really interesting because we were doing some experiments at work because we're looking at using SQLite in an application. And SQLite was like a factor of 10 faster than MySQL up to like
this was 1 billion records ago.
Yeah.
Well, I don't even know if it
might not have been version 3 of SQLite.
Did you try HerpDB? That's actually
embedded. No, SQLite is embedded as well.
Yeah. HerpDB was supposed to be very good.
Okay. Like SQLite is the databases, like Firefox uses it internally for all their settings and everything. Does it have Java-based? Can't use it. It's got to have .NET bindings.
I don't know. It's Oracle owns it right now, but it's still open source, so you can get it. I don't know.
It's got to have .NET bindings. Actually, we've already got SQLite approved, so that's it. It's approved. Don't touch it.
Okay.
It'll get unapproved. Okay. Once it's approved, that's it.
Okay. Sure. Shall we go on the newsletter? Just for halves and gentlemen, I want to say that Python 3.0 was released.
That's supposed to be like almost a complete, or not a complete rewrite, but it's not supposed to be.
Do error, caching. Oh, no, repeating.
You must be excited.
I heard of. Is that what they
have stuff? You were just saying that. Yeah. I thought you were saying that's like one of the big features.
I've written Python and, programs are nice. I like it. It just seems so pretty.
Run from the prompt.
They say something about that. The developer said something. That's why 3 is so different, is because they are going to force you into a more of a methodology.
Yeah, that's what it's generally is for. You sort of mold it in a certain shape. And if you can completely automate Python, then people get fed up with all the crap they got written because they made it so loose, they can go back to it. Yeah. That does force you to actually
catch exceptions. Yeah.
Exception. Love exceptions.
Those try catches are so cumbersome when you're writing them out, though. Try, catch, IO exception, comma, SQL exception.
You can just
what the
just,
you just can, exception. You just catch exceptions just, and then bury them. Bury all your exceptions.
I even started writing try catches in my JavaScript. That's GoTex.
I wrap
everything.
Well, that's JavaScript. You just wrap all of your JavaScript in one big try-catch loop, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah,
if error occurs, give up.
If you're using, some browser to go handle a second, so we're going to have to help for SuperPro. Which browser wouldn't do that? Or is it a whole fast?
One big try-catch. This site doesn't work with other browser.
Yeah. And then there was an article about let's talk about Python 3.0. So it was more. And I think the first article was just a statement, just released, and the other one was more what it means. It was quite a lengthy article. It was always Python, and it was developed as a learning language.
I was going to say, it's a terrible learning language.
Yes.
And it just kind of grew into
it looks like it's kind of based off, loosely off of Perl. Some idea, well, everything's based off of some idea of Perl.
Based
or C.
Perl's from C.
Yeah.
And that's from O.
Yeah. C++ came from Smalltalk. And actually, C kind of came from Pascal as well, and Pascal came from Fortran or COBOL, I don't know.
COBOL came from Fortran.
The other thing I can tell you about Alice, by the way, is it's an object-oriented language.
Fully object-oriented, okay.
Somebody called also COBOL an object-oriented.
I know at one point I'd seen like a poster of all the programming languages and where they all came from. Kind of like the same thing for, you know, where the Linux is.
Looks like a genealogy tree in the Lord of the Rings book or something.
You know, that might have been where I saw it.
You mean the end of reading?
At the end of the third book, it had all the programming languages. So I'll see if I can't find it here. It'll be a while.
Okay.
Don't wait.
So let's go on to the next article. And it was that IBM decided to include Ubuntu up their desktop offerings. Did somebody read that?
I read a different article and I thought it sounded pretty interesting. Basically, they are really advertising as they use a Microsoft replacement.
There was something with a VM component.
I think they're advertising it that this is not a virtual machine, but this is a thin client that goes on the Blade servers.
Okay.
So they dish it out to the community or to the business. Each client is, you know, residing on a server. It's not really it's like an external server type thing.
Yes.
But it's an Ubuntu distribution with the whole Lotus suite of nodes and Exchange, you know, all work. So you have all your business applications, but from an IBM.
So that's why the IBM actually took the open office.
Is it Symphony now or is it the cost?
What's that?
I think they call it Symphony.
Symphony. I like
the only bad issue is that there's no client. So I think that's what is missing from Office Suite is the client.
So there was actually those big announcements. It was on the laptop.
Excuse me?
It was on the laptop.
Fire and blow down. You know, when he dies, I don't know. But that won't be long.
It's going to get white then.
What could you get better than?
A dumb guy.
RPM all the way. I'm sorry.
Are there any vendors that natively have store recently?
No.
I don't know. I can't name it.
You can find the factory pre-installed just about anything, but it may not be.
I didn't know any of the big players were, you know, not Red Hat like that.
I'm not aware of it.
Red Hat's been back in Portland.
Yes, but they had a couple of I think where they could not overcome the challenge was the Codexes. And for whatever reason, they went by and filling the Codexes, they went to strength the Microsoft and the they
a big deal with Red Hat. It was going to dish it out and support Red Hat and the old outs. I'll see what you can.
So there was an article about PDF editing on Linux.
Tried that in OpenOffice 3, the importing, it actually worked really well.
Yes. I want to say the same thing, that actually the Linux PDF in OpenOffice plugin, that worked very good.
You have two or three? Okay.
Three. I don't know if the plugin works for two.
I thought it was like something native that came in pre.
No, you have to have a plugin.
So plugin must have came pre-installed then.
Maybe it was installed with the distribution.
Yeah, because it just worked.
But there are multiple other programs, whatever you can actually try. I think they actually were set up with that. Six. OpenOffice PDF import is the last one. OpenOffice Suite is the same thing. PDF. Well, they were talking about the PDF juggler. The new juggler. If you remember, one time we were talking about names of open source programs, you know, the database sent. There's a juggler which is based on Acrobat, because Acrobat, everybody knows, is for editing files, so straightforward. Never mind. example about image viewer qualities. And I guess you can talk about image viewers. It's a fairly nice topic. You know, everybody has images. So, yeah.
Is there any equivalence of my product in Linux that's...
The one that's been lately reviewed was Picasso.
I started using
Picasso. But they didn't put that in this one.
I started using Picasso and it's very nice. Because Picasso is not open source.
And it's not really native Linux either. It's through Wine.
Yeah, and actually I run it through Wine. I don't run the Linux version. I run it through Wine. It appears to work very nice. There's some QXC, never heard about it. GWENView.
Probably GWENView.
I of Gnome. I think I of Gnome is you put a risk on the Gnome. Case Swirl. Never heard about it, but it's PD.
That's what you have in yours, right?
What?
Case Swirl? It looks like it.
No, it's not it.
You sure? Oh, it's GWENView. Okay.
Looks like there's a native Picasa for Linux beta.
Yeah, there is native, but
isn't that crappy? Did you say that?
It's not.
It's a Vine, prepackaged Vine, so that's why it's rather a low one. Then there is a GStump. GStump is known for Linux Paradise. And GQU. And F-Spot. I don't know, there's a lot of spots. Something like it.
If they make a few improvements, just the functionality and stability, I think I'd be happier with S-Spot than Picasa. It's just your fact that it's simpler. It's even simpler than Picasa for example.
But you know, I'm waiting on those improvements for 2 years. You know, and I know that I'm improving it because it looks, for those 2 years, it looks very similar.
Are good when they can set up presentations or like full screen PowerPoint style presentations with, you know, music in the background and stuff like that, or can you export a series of pictures to a video with transition?
Yeah.
I'm only at 1 hour and 57 minutes from that one. That's a good day.
That's why my internet all of a sudden got
3.6k a second.
Yeah. Yeah, I got the other 3.3 over here.
You guys quit it.
I'm trying to upload the stream.
300k over there.
I was messing with like my MTU trying to get like a better, you know, I like set it down to 200. Yeah. I'm like, maybe this will work. Smaller packets. Doesn't do anything. Set it back up.
Don't you guys know better? You
are playing something. He shouldn't know better. I was installing Banshee because I wanted to see what it was like. It's small. Just a few libraries.
There was an article that Firefox has a head-on which is displaying Word 2000 document. What was interesting about it was that it was Microsoft who wrote this head-on.
Hey, where's Word and PowerPoint?
That's the thing. We don't care about that.
All of the business world.
Then there was an article about this OpenOffice. It's going to have UI interface changes. Did somebody read that?
I looked through it.
Go to those tools.
Won't happen for quite a while. They say it's going to be more of an ongoing thing than a...
It's more of a story than a screenshot.
Yeah, there won't be screenshots for a while, at least like a 3.2 or 3.3 release.
Is it that people try to match up with a ribbon?
Yeah, Microsoft did a ribbon, so now they have to do it.
They're doing a ribbon?
They haven't said what they're going to do, but just from the way it was written, they're like, oh yeah, Microsoft did this ribbon idea and it really cleaned up the UI, and I'm like, oh.
What? Are they saying that they like the UI?
Yes.
Windows 7?
Yes.
proposals.
Yeah.
I mean, they should learn from this, they should have learned from Open Office 7. You don't make that many changes in one shot. You gotta.
Well,
we organize our members and stuff like that.
We're not gonna just change everything. It's gonna be a progressive.
Everything, it just sucks. It just plain sucks. It's not intuitive, it's not well-aligned, it's not.
From some of the reviews, though, of people who've never used Office, they like the ribbon better. But then it's always what people learn the first time through.
Is that my wife uses it, she likes it, but she doesn't know what she's doing.
Right.
Did you find that those programs?
Yep, you know what you want.
I've got one, Word, SourceForge, there's.
You don't want it, it's kind of just there.
Well, yeah, you just keep clicking, you'll eventually find it.
I mean, enlarge the book, there's another link.
This is just a part of it too, it's bigger than that, but it's got.
So who's the root languages?
The root languages, starting off, Haskell, Fortran, November of 1954. That was really the first one, then some of the other ones, B-O, and that actually turned into COBOL, and then ALGOL. And then LISP. And then from that, Snowball, and then BASIC showed up, and CPL, Simula, PL1, MUMPS, Logo, Pascal, Smalltalk.
Where did Pascal come from?
Pascal came from, let's see, where was it? ALGOL 68.
So it didn't come from COBOL.
And actually, ALGOL came from Fortran. Right?
Oh, okay.
So Pascal actually came from Fortran.
Gotcha, okay.
And then C plus, let's go with the C++. That came from CPL, which came from ALGOL as well. Previous to splitting off the Pascal.
So we should be teaching Fortran for the language. And punch cards or something.
All right.
Hello, cards.
I guess.
Make our students appreciate it at a higher level.
And actually, a good amount of the languages.
Punch cards from CMU. You have people walking around with trays of these things, you know, and don't drop it.
Yeah, listen.
Yeah, it was a catastrophe. And there's big wide pieces of paper with the, you know, ratchet balls.
Java originally was called Oak.
Yes,
Oak.
That's why I said Oak. Yes.
Which came from Smalltalk and Cedar. Go figure, eh?
That's my Oak.
C and Objective C.
Huh. Yeah, Python actually is deriving from C++.
Yeah,
too.
Python came from C, ABC, Modula 3. There's a C++ here. It doesn't really list it on this one, but.
Yeah, the big basic ones were basically Lisp, ALGOL 60, and Fortran 1. I mean, that's really the three sections of the tree.
What did Lisp turn into?
Lisp?
Scheme. On the list,
a little bit of Smalltalk.
Smalltalk is a scheme language.
Pretty much that's about it.
Yeah.
So where does C came from? Fortran?
C comes from ALGOL.
Yeah, CPL, which then came from ALGOL.
But Fortran really, ALGOL even really comes from Fortran, the early Fortran.
Yep. So Fortran is really the daddy of it all.
So should we go on that article?
BASIC doesn't have any arrows at all. It didn't come from anything and it didn't go anywhere.
It's
just one big line, BASIC.
BASIC.
That's it.
It came from somewhere. They call it hell. Way to go, hell. You can. So shall we move on? Thanks for the history lesson.
Yeah, I'll save a copy of that.
Yeah. If anybody want a printable PDF of 150 of these languages, I'll give you the URL for it.
Yeah, this one's fairly big.
Post it and put it up in your...
This one, they said they were actually giving it out at conferences for a while.
Yeah, what is that?
This is from O'Reilly.
Oh, O'Reilly, okay.
That's what the whole conference.
Oh, my.
Yeah, that's...
So shall we...
All right, yeah, I'm done.
Another one? There was something about Songbird 1.0, and it was sort of compared with the iTunes, and...
Does it represent 1.0 the games of memory usage?
There was nothing mentioned about that. But, you know, if you buy a 6-gig computer right now, 1 gig is nothing.
Yeah, and what's iTunes? iTunes in Mac is probably 40 gigabytes. Songbird was, what's that, 160? It's glorified.
Well, it is a browser. Everything's written into it.
You do see it as 10 of the best Songbird add-ons, because you can only use about 10 at a time before you run out of memory.
Yeah.
So you have to pick and choose.
You overrun 2 gig. Actually, those add-ons are pretty good.
I've tried to use iTunes Champion. If someone starts out maybe with us first, media manager, maybe they'd like, but I can't get used to it.
You know, I like to have us integrated with the website. You know, but at some point, you're searching for a group, so they came there and said, "Oh, there are this many songs. What do you want to do with them on that page?" So it's like sort of like
I think your music was like. Music,
like,
collection,
and
just a bunch of stuff on the internet.
Yeah, it tries to get you more stuff to it.
And it just, yeah.
Maybe it was even a plugin that you could set up a website, like if you were just if you check out a lot of YouTube blogs, then you could basically turn it into an RSS feed. Then it would go and pull the website and download it.
When you think about it, the Deezer service, which we if you kind of find out here about it, started as a blog on the big people who had music.
So, does it have an integrated podcast system or something?
Podcast, like iPod?
Well, like with free syndicated feeds of MP3s and videos and stuff.
What it does is, let's say you come to a website and you're looking for some artist, and that tells you, it actually scrapes through the website and says there are 3 songs, you know, and you can listen to it and download that. I think it's a fair browser, you know, fair player. Yeah, it must be for you. And there was a open source content management system, and they would talk about some of them I do. They're talking about Joomla, they're talking about Alfresco. Does anybody know what Alfresco is? It's a content management, I think it's written in Java actually, and it's more geared towards enterprise. And there's a community edition, and there's a paid edition. And there's a few more over there. Easy Publish, I think that was for enterprise too. Then WordPress, Joomla, and then Razuna, or Razuna, Razun. They were saying that it manages a lot of, they call it like audio and video content. I don't know if it's for publishing podcasts, but it was, let me check it out. If you want to publish a podcast, some people are doing WordPress, and there was a module.
That's one of the things I really like about Bluehost, is that it has the ability to, it has this add-on in the control panel called Simple Scripts, where you can just basically, you click on it, you give the database a name, username, and password, you click create, and the web app creates the database and sets everything up to tell what directory you go in, and then from there you can manage it all. You don't have to manually edit any scripts or anything else to create pages. It's just within a matter of a minute, I can set up a WordPress blog or a Google blog or a Gmail or any number of them. So it's really smart.
Holy shoot.
I can get rid of my NAS storage device. It's
Well, I don't need the video transfers.
I can transfer stuff all my life.
I see.
Wow, should I?
That's much like my old 2600. My slip connection to the university.
You know, you'll probably get a better speed than you can get
right now. It wasn't much worse.
I'm downloading at 100 bytes a second.
Yeah, no,
it's blazing.
It takes a little while.
200. What you got, let's
see.
Refine print, because I heard about the case that guy thought that he would use it as backup, and that they're saying it's unlimited use as long as you just use it as backup.
Yeah.
So then they could use his account and proceed with too much. The tax Christmas wallpaper is actually this guy here. So if somebody wants it.
Ho ho ho.
Ho ho ho.
Ho ho ho.
Mistletoe. Then there's a cheeky colors thing, which is, I guess, out of the...
I still have the background and the login theme for cheeky. I think they just stole that, actually, the KDE desktop background. But it looks nice. It's blue and swirly. The cheeky thing is neat because it's a dark theme, but they left the light color window back.
Oh, I'm sorry. There was
nothing to text in it. So the menus and the headers and stuff are all dark green. The content is still bright.
Okay. So actually, there was actually a link to the Christmas wallpapers as a background. So that's what it is. So you can have this guy here.
And what's the total number? So that's actually
3 Songbird?
No.
Wow.
But that, I think that might be including 62 megs of resin.
You got the memory, might as well use it.
You're paying for it, might as well use it.
Well, you got to start up on the programs and see if the memory usage goes down. If it doesn't, then...
Well, yeah, actually, the guy from OpenSUSE was looking for our print slab menu because I think the slab menu came from OpenSUSE menu, and he wasn't very happy because stuff was actually hard-coded in there.
What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with that?
That's your maintenance right there.
Yes,
that's another thing.
Job security.
Take out the variables
and
paste in the paths.
Yep.
Take out the what?
Take out all the variables. Well, maybe you don't have variables. Maybe everything's hard coded.
Magic variables.
Yeah, replace the variables with the path instead of having the variables. You put a path hard coding in there.
Well, that's
And if there's an error, just close the application.
Guaranteed maintenance revenue. No, what you do is you wrap it in try catches.
No.
Somebody told me a story about this company, and they said, our software does not crash. And they were adamant about it. And somebody actually got down to asking the developers, how does your software not crash? Oh, we wrap try catches around everything. So it can't crash, it just catches the error.
Because they consume the exception.
Right. So it doesn't crash, it just doesn't work right.
It just eventually just uses more memory.
No, it doesn't even do it. It just nope, there was an error.
Yes.
But I'm not going to crash.
Yes. You consume the exception and you don't have to do anything.
You just bury it, you try it.
It doesn't show any query for a race condition.
But the software doesn't crash.
If it hangs, that...
I think they also had like some type of system that monitored memory and just randomly killed things.
I can't serve. You're right, you can't do that. I think what it's meant to do though is a lot of this stuff is driven to setting up analytics.
Or if we sort by, see that drum, it's got it. Could be a kind of a sorting mechanism on.
LastFM's got an interesting sorting method. Or LastFM for their online stuff.
Yeah.
They have something called tags. You just assign a tag to it, and the tag is anything.
Yeah.
Anything you want, you know, the type, what they sound like, whatever. But then other users can go on and search for tags. So you just go on, and then whenever you see a band, there's like a box that has like the different tags and how many people have associated the tags, how big the text is.
Is that how we call it on Northern Kings?
Yes, that's where I call the Northern Kings. The Northern Kings are a Finnish heavy metal vocalist super group. They do classic 80s rock though.
Classic
80s.
I honestly have to say that I have found multiple bands on LastFM that I would have never heard about that I've purchased multiple albums.
Really?
Like I found Shadow Gallery on them, and we're gonna have four of their albums.
Actually, a member of the Finnish Kings, and one of them are from Nightwish, bass player.
And it was pretty much just going on and starting up their SoundFlight radio, and it just goes through all the artists, people that say it sounds like that, and then I just made a list and said, yeah, these guys, I'll keep track of these guys for later. And then I went back and looked at some of their stuff, and it went, yeah, this is exactly what I want. And I would have never found it otherwise.
OnRock has this service that you can hook in that does sort of similar, where you tag all the music that you like over time, and then it submits it to a database, and you get back
actually
what other people have found is the same type of music that they like.
Right here on actually right in Banshee here, they've got a LastFM plugin.
Yep.
And as long as you're connected to LastFM, which apparently my network isn't good enough to do, it gives you.
Is that what your neighbors are?
Yeah. Okay. As you're playing songs, it gives you, this band sounds like these other bands that you might be interested in, and gives you suggestions right in Banshee as you're playing.
Have you turned on the
Scrabble? Yes. Yep. And that's the thing too, you Scrabble your songs, so...
You can play like your own music library?
Yep. It says,
that's what I think
you've played this.
Well, is that service?
Yeah, so like here's like a list of recently loved tracks, recently played, the top artists that I listened to. And then neighbors or other people recommended.
So they just need to add an I hate music.
And you can actually ban. You can ban stuff on there too.
I ban all kinds of stuff.
It's like ban.
I didn't ban the Northern Kings because it's too much fun to listen to the Finnish heavy metal superstars singing recently in another year.
So it's actually got like a list of songs that are recommended here, and you can just go and you can play them right now, stream them off of their website.
I've heard of that.
Speaking of strange things, listen, we have any other Screaming Jay Hawkins fans in the room? So check out Screaming Jay Hawkins if you'll find it unusual, to say the least. There's some YouTube stuff of him, and he's got albums. He's an unusual. Yeah, well, it's not heavy metal, but it's loud.
Well, shall we keep on going? There was an article about Jeep Caprice educational suite for kids. So when you guys got married, and you know, if there's anything, you know, just keep an eye on it, because maybe you'll need it, you know, one day. There is how to install Feed in Live instructions. So
Is it with an air replacement?
Yes. Yes. It has to. It absolutely has to. I give up. I gave up on that stupid script. It's like one of those stupid automatic, oh, we'll do everything for you. But if you don't know how the automate tools work, like in intricate detail, you'll never get it to work. So it's like, you might as well just give me the command line automate tools, and it probably would have worked. But no, you got wrapped all this GUI stuff around it. It's all written in Python.
Actually,
what happened was, first time I started it from GUI, error happened. I don't know what happened. So I ran it again, and it's not fast because it's compiling everything. It takes forever. So I ran it from a prompt. It gave a Python error. Python error because it was missing a dependency. It couldn't have told me it was missing the dependency. No, the Python just errored up.
It just goes away.
So, yeah, I installed the dependency, ran it again. Different error. Different dependency. So I had to go out, and I did that about six times before I finally got all the dependencies. And then three quarters of the way through, my build failed. Error in one of the files. And I'm like, I am not going to go in and fix their source code. I'm done. I've had to do that before. That's not fun.
Well, you have that same sort of experience with some of the same MySQL server stuff.
Oh, yeah. I have a heck of a time with database societies.
That's really my idea. That's actually decent. There's a couple of things that aren't so bad. That's a crash. They should have done something else.
I
have to use Ardour because it's just, it doesn't work right.
A lot of known stuff is here.
Maybe it's okay for that.
Yeah. Ardour is the professional one.
But what is Ardour?
Is it in C?
Yes. I think it's C++.
It's a professional. It's like a pro tool.
Audio. Multi-track audio recording tool.
DAW.
Yeah.
Digital audio workstation.
Yep.
Oh, okay. There was another article that was about some Ubuntu system panel, which I wasn't sure what it was.
What is it?
But it's supposed to be some kind of panel.
What is that?
So it's
huge.
It's larger.
EAP.
So
it looks a lot like the init menu, because you can look at the init menu and get it to look exactly.
Yeah. So I think it is because here you have actually your system management stuff. And then you have your user info, and then your applications.
Is
that
something that's always on the desktop?
No, that, well.
It's always in front, always on top.
I think what it is that the app runs. I think that's what it is. And they are saying how
you
probably run
it also. So you click and expand it?
Are they saying that they're blanking? It looks like it's just combining a bunch of the menus. Basically, the menus that are already in.
Yes, it's just another menu.
Let's just throw it all in one panel and be done with it.
Yeah.
So it's always just throw what it looks like.
I used to have somewhere that here, actually. I don't like it for most things.
You're using Slab, don't you?
I have a Slab on here right now. And I just keep my top 10 programs in it, and I just got to put it into the control panel.
Yeah.
So I think you don't have to have this huge loaded thing. You put the stuff you usually sit there and then have the. A simple known tiny drop down that just takes a huge list of everything off of the side because my resolution
is good on Android. Is that what you're doing? Throw a panel up, throw your shortcuts along the top, and you're done.
I'm
not going to do that.
Put your panel on the side.
Yeah.
Screen's wider anyway.
I need the real estate.
Panel on the side. Do what
Fedora
used to do and make your panel on the bottom like 48 pixels tall and get rid of the top panel and you're set. I don't really like the panels on top, panels on bottom. A lot of wasted space.
It is a lot of wasted space.
And especially since your screen is already super wide.
First thing I do is I
actually,
I put the bottom
down
on the side at some point.
I like
it. It's so much space is wasted on the top and the bottom,
right.
And everything is vertical oriented. So you're only using part of your screen this way, and then the rest is all this wasted space, and then you got all this crap on the top and bottom.
We have another article, how to install mPlayer and multimedia Core Access.
even link DVD, CSS. Oh, there was an article about Handbrake, and that was the point. Okay, if Handbrake is not ripping DVDs right now, so what is the program for? Because they are using VLC library, and VLC library needs to have leaked DVD CSS.
Yeah, the nice thing with Handbrake is it already has a predefined format.
So
now Handbrake will no longer rip DVDs.
Not unless you have VLC loaded.
Yeah, VLC loaded. And in Linux, you need to also leave DVD CSS.
Yeah, so they used to have their own live, their own DVD.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier.
They probably have still other versions if we go there.
Yeah, we see other versions yesterday.
Did you install it on the Linux machine?
No, I had it on the Leopard.
And on Mac, well, Mac is the same thing, you need to have VLC right now.
So. Do you have to have the CSS?
In Mac, I don't think so because Mac.
Probably
provides it. It works natively. Just drag and drop tab.
They pay for the decoder.
Thank you for listening to Hack Republic Radio. HPR is sponsored by Caro.net, so head on over to caro.net for all your hosting needs.